This is the Friday, July 13th, 2018 version of the Market Plus segment. Joining us now is Ted Seifried. Ted, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We're going to start off here, Ted, and shake things up a bit, have a little fun, because you are famous on Twitter because of your quote-unquote corn hat.
Oh, yeah?
And we did a Twitter poll this week, and I think the poll was, should I wear the hat on Market Plus, or should you?
Yeah, so that was my Twitter poll. And I wouldn't say I'm famous anywhere, for that matter, but I appreciate that. And yes, we did a Twitter poll, and we asked who should wear the corn hat. It's my corn hat. I usually wear the corn hat, so I'm kind of upset that you won the Twitter poll. So here you go. You can wear the corn hat. Enjoy.
Ted, it's going to mess up my hair.
Yeah, but don't make it smell bad, please.
All right. Yeah. How does it look, Ted?
That looks fantastic, actually. It still looks better on me.
All right. Well, I'm not going to wear it for the whole show, but we appreciate it, Ted, for you bringing the corn hat today.
Of course.
We also have a lot of great social media questions that I want to make sure we get to today. So let's just kick it off here with Tim in Crookston, Minnesota. A lot of questions this week again about tariff concerns. What signs would the market give us to signal that it believes all the negative consequences of a trade war have been factored into prices?
Tim, right?
Yes.
Tim, good question. You know, the surefire one would be to see a bunch of exports go to China. because the question really now is, you know, have we outpaced the tariffs? And we're not quite there yet, but a tariff of 25%, well, we're more than 20% off the highs. So, yeah. The other thing would be reactions. You know, go back to the Friday the tariffs went into place, Friday, July 6th. We were up 30 cents on that day, actually almost 40 cents on that day. Just on the idea that, you know, you worry about something for so long and when it finally happens, it's just not so bad. The concern we have now, though, is the extension of this war. You know, how long is this going to go on? I think for a while the market was under the impression that we'd get this cleared up before our next big export season or the end of this marketing year. So I think with the idea that, you know, another $200 billion on tariffs and possibly more coming, that's just kind of brought us to the notion that this could go on for quite some time. And so that's what the market's trying to digest now. But with the USDA making the changes they did on the balance sheet on Thursday, I think that will go a long way to getting rid of some uncertainty of what will happen, at least in this first year of tariffs. So I think we're close to it. It's just a matter of, can we get the rhetoric to simmer down and just get the feeling that, all right, this isn't going to go on for 5-6 years and really cause a big problem where we're going to lose a ton of market share.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. With that being said, a lot of questions also were asking if they should price, you know, corn and beans and Old Crop and all that. So let's take a question here from at Fake Bob VP in Iowa. He said, I have a bin full of unsold corn. Should I turn it into ethanol or heat my home with it? And what's your recommendation?
All right, Fake Bob. I'm always a fan of ethanol because I put it in my car and I enjoy that. So I'm going to vote ethanol. But, you know, seriously, what do we do with Old Crop corn if we haven't priced it? Hopefully, guys are more than 80% sold. At least, you know, I mean, that's what we've been urging our clients to do from a long time. I mean, but at this point, you know, as we were talking during the main session, you know, we can get out of whack with fundamentals sometimes. And I think we've done that at this point. I do believe that we have a higher yield than the 174 national average yield. But
what
I don't.
What do you anticipate for yield then?
Well, I'm currently using 176.2 in my balance sheets. Mm-hmm. I can see it as high as 178. I don't think it's going to be much higher than that. For reasons being that, you know, we've really pushed this crop quickly. Part of the reason why we've had such good yields the last 4 years, record yields the last 4 years, is because we've had cool and wet, but not too wet, August. We've had so much time to fill out grain and just put weight on corn. And just that sort of slow cook, extended growing season. It doesn't seem we're going to have that this year. We're going to be really warm during fill, and I don't know if we fill out quite as well. I think it's a great crop. I don't know if it's a 180 or 181. We'll see. But even at 177, as we were talking about before, I still think we're looking at a balance sheet between 1.5 and 1.6 billion bushels. So for me, 350 or sub 350 December corn does not make any sense. I think we should be back in filling that 410 gap at some point. And you know, I think we will. So hopefully you don't have a whole lot of Old Crop corn left, but whatever you do have, you know, I'd be looking to try to hold on to it and, you know, try to look at selling it higher. If you've got more than 80% old crop or even more than 50% old crop still sitting around, I think you do need to have some puts in case NAFTA issues erupt. But, you know, if you're sitting on 5 to 10%, what I'd call gambling bushels, I hate that term, but I would want to hold on to that as much as possible.
Okay.
But look at basis, though, because with this crop being advanced, you might see cash dump happening before, a little bit earlier than usual. And basis right now has gotten pretty favorable in many areas.
All right. Well, we had a question, another question come in, kind of on the flip side here with soybeans. Jeremy in Landlark, Illinois said, should we be storing beans? Capturing the carry and betting basis will improve later for them if Chinese tariff situation is resolved.
Yeah, it's a tough bet to make on when the Chinese tariff or when the trade wars would be resolved. I don't know if we can do that. I've sort of been a fan of storing beans the last few years anyways because I think we have better chances to sell than at harvest. So I don't mind that idea. But I don't know. You know, I mean, if we get a halfway decent bounce in the month of August, if we're warmer, drier, for whatever reason, if we have weather, or just sort of a relief bounce after all this, I would look at starting to price some of those beans, though.
Is it worth, guys, holding on to beans if they have the storage, or if they don't have the storage to pay for it to be stored, or do you think only if they have storage should they be holding on?
No, I mean, if you don't have the storage and you're paying commercial storage, I wouldn't suggest doing that because you can take that money, you can own call options, which have gotten really cheap now at this point, which might serve you quite a bit better anyways. So, yeah, no, I don't think I'd be paying for commercial storage for soybeans.
Okay. Let's take another question here. Shane in Bloomfield, Nebraska, Facebook question. How do we get a fall harvest rally or see a sharp spike in high?
How do we get a fall harvest rally or
see a sharp spike high?
Okay. There's a number of ways to do that. Let's go with that spike high first. Obviously, any resolution to trade tariffs would do something like that, regardless of what's going on with grain fundamentals. I mean, that's part of the soybean fundamentals, obviously, but you know that would do something. That would be a spike for sure. But how do we get fall highs? Well, the usual way that happens is we think a crop is one thing, and then we get out into harvest and realize we have something different. Could be one of those years. You know, last year, for example, we thought the crop wasn't really that great. But again, that really wonderful August and into early September gave us fantastic yields, record yields, right? This year might be the opposite because of the heat that we've had. So we might be getting out there thinking at a 181 national average yield, figuring out, it's good, but it's a 176, 175. That's when you get that fall rally, especially in a situation or a climate like this where we have so much demand being built at the lower price levels. We've seen exports kind of ballooning, you know, and ethanol is just on fire. So yeah, I mean, this is a year where we could see something like that. So keep an eye out for it.
All right. We're going to take another question here from Paul in Columbus, Wisconsin. With the tariffs in play, what is the price disadvantage between the U.S. farmer and a Brazilian farmer?
The price disadvantage between
U.S. farmers and Brazilian farmers. I'm assuming he means from a soybean perspective.
Okay, so not like a cost of production perspective, but okay. Well, obviously 25% is the tariff, so that is, you know, the difference. But I mean, look at where we're trading and versus where Brazilian soybeans are trading. We're $1 to $1.15, $1.16 under where Brazil is at right now. So they're getting $1.08 to $1.16 more than we are. Plus, you know, factor in the currency advantage there that they have. And yeah, no, they're getting paid quite well. They've basically thrown a party in Brazil based on the tariff idea, because that just means so much more business and competition for their soybeans. Keep in mind that, you know, there's aspects of their soybeans that have a little bit more quality than ours. So there's a little bit of that premium anyways. There usually is a premium, but that is an exceptionally wide premium based on the tariff. So we're trying to price ourselves back into the market, and it's not fun. It doesn't give us good prices on our board. It doesn't give us good cash prices either. So they certainly have the advantage. That is exactly why the tariffs are in play. I mean, that's what it is, right? But I don't know. You know, I mean, at some point we get cheap enough where every other country in the world, aside from China, starts looking at us, including possibly Brazil and Argentina.
Well, I think that's kind of my next question is, with all that being said, does it make sense for China to be buying Brazilian soybeans if they're at such a premium to U.S. beans?
Well, 25% tariff. So, yes, at the moment, I mean, if we're talking $8 beans, you know, that's still about $2. So they're still getting a better deal, so to speak, from Brazil. But, you know, at some point, it might get wide enough to... In fact, that might be what the market has to do. Although I would think that Brazil would step in before that happened and start buying our beans, just the idea of playing the arbitrage game. You know, so that might be the floor that we have underneath us. So, yeah, it'll be interesting, you know, whether we get to that point or not. Because again, China will have to buy beans from us or buy them through somebody else. So I don't know if we get to that floor. I don't know if we'll get a full, you know, $1.80 under Brazil. But you know, at $1.16, I think that seems fair for the moment.
Okay, Ted, we started fun. We're going to end fun. This is a question you get a lot. Baloo at Farmer Boys wants to know: is a hot dog a sandwich?
Well, here, you know what? Let me have my thinking hat for that. And well, Blue, my man, you know for a fact that a hot dog is a sandwich. Let's talk about logic and reasoning. We've got a bun and meat on a bun. This is a sandwich, right? I mean, it doesn't matter that we don't call it a hot dog sandwich. It is a sandwich. We don't call an Italian beef sandwich, or we don't call an Italian beef sandwich, or a Philly cheesesteak sandwich.
What about an open-faced sandwich?
So we'll have to save that discussion for another time, because there is I can argue both sides of that. I don't truly believe an open-faced sandwich is a sandwich until you actually go like that. I mean, it was a sandwich, but it's been a deconstructed sandwich. How's that?
All right.
But a hot dog is most absolutely a sandwich. That is the logical explanation. It's reasoning. It's a fact of the matter. So yes, it is a sandwich.
All right. Ted Seifert, always a pleasure.
A pleasure is mine, Delaney.
Join us again next week when we look at one Nebraska town's efforts to create incentives for better housing. And Sue Martin sits across from me at the market-to-market table. So until then, thanks for watching, listening, or reading. I'm Delaney Howell. Have a great week.